Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, welcome. Glad that you are here. For those of you on YouTube, you see Nathan Tippy there. Just mentioned a book that I recommended some time ago called Plotactivity by Doug Wilson. Great book. Great little book. I would encourage you all to read it. For partners, we have our next Cross to Crown Partners Zoom meeting this Saturday, 10:30 my time, 10:30 Mountain Time. You should have already received an email with a link to that Zoom meeting. So if you didn't, let me know and I'll see what happened and I'll get you a link. If you would like to join us, you can go to crosstocrown.org, click on CTC Partners, become a monthly partner with us, and you can join us for that Zoom meeting. We spend an hour and a half, 2 hours talking about New Covenant theology and pretty much anything else that would be helpful to the rest of you. So it's not too late to support our ministry and join us for the online gathering there on Zoom. All right, so we've been talking about the Old Covenant and its place in the larger story of Jesus. And today in particular, you're going to see something that for some of you, it may be the first time you've really noticed this. Now, we are taught, or we just kind of assume because of the preachers and teachers that we hear, that the Ten Commandments are the eternal moral standard of righteousness. Reformed theology has told us that they are binding on everyone. They were binding on Adam. They're binding on us and so on, even though the scripture never says that. And there's this this view that the first, that, you know, there are two tablets, right? The tablets of stone, that one tablet contains our obligation to God and the second tablet, our obligation to man. And if that's true, then they would say the first table had, you know, four commandments, the first four, and then the second table would have the last six. And that's, of course, from the Reformed delineation of the covenants. The Lutherans divided even differently. So how do you do that? I don't know. But I don't think any of that is true, or at least it's not knowable. We are not told how many commandments were on each. I think it's much more likely that all 10 words were on both tables, both tablets. But I can't prove that. I just think that fits the place and the role of the tables of stone, tablets of stone, better than another explanation based on how covenants worked and Meredith Klein's work and all that. So, that's not the main thing. The point is, we make assumptions, or we're taught assumptions about the Ten Commandments and the covenant, and I want to show you what the Bible itself says is the primary role and function of the tablets of stone, okay? So Exodus 25 says this. The Lord spoke to Moses, "Tell the Israelites to take an offering for me from every person motivated by a willing heart. You are to receive my offering. This is the offering you're to accept: gold, silver, bronze, blue, purple, scarlet, ram skins, oil, etc., etc., etc. For this purpose, let them make for me a sanctuary that I may live among them." All right, so that's all very simple. Collect offerings for the people of Israel. The Lord has just led them out of slavery to Egypt. And he said, take an offering, and I want you to make a sanctuary, what we know is going to be the tabernacle, right? It says, according to all that I'm showing you, the pattern of the tabernacle, the pattern of all its furnishings, you must make it exactly so. And then he gives the dimensions, and they're to overlay it with gold and cast rings so they could put the poles through it and all this, right? So you get further description here. Look at verse 16. He calls it an ark through this. Make an ark. I should have focused on that. Here it is, verse 10. This is Exodus 25:10. They are to make an ark of acacia wood, a chest, right? A box, an ark, a container. And then describes the wood rings and overlaying and so on. Now look at verse 16. You are to put into the ark the testimony that I will give to you. Now, how many times have you read Exodus and not paid attention to that verse? Build this ark and put into the ark the testimony that I will give to you. And he goes on, talks about the lid. You're to make an atonement lid of pure gold. Here's the width and length. You're to make two cherubim. We've seen the pictures, right? To make them of hammered metal, one cherub on one end and one on the other, and so on. And they're facing each other, et cetera. And look at this, verse 21. You are to put the atonement lid on top of the ark, so on top of this chest or this box. And in the ark, you are to put the testimony I'm giving to you. So the purpose of this ark, this chest, this box with the lid, with the cherubim on top and so on, the purpose, the function is, it is the container for the testimony. Now let me ask you, in what context do we find testimonies? I'm not talking about giving your testimony at a church service. That's taking the word and sort of ripping it out of its normal context. Yeah, Lewis got it. It's a courtroom term, isn't it? If you were a witness, testimony, bearing witness, those are synonyms. If you witnessed a crime or witnessed the accused being someplace else where you could provide testimony that his alibi is true, then you would be called upon by the court to share what you have seen, to share what you know. That's what it means to testify, to give a testimony, to bear witness is to say, this is what I know, this is what I've seen. In the 10 words, one of the 10 words or the 10 commandments, one of them is to not bear false witness. That is a courtroom setting term. It's not a term that is synonymous with lying. But when you bear false witness at a courtroom setting, the person may be sent to jail. He may be stoned to death. It may cost him dearly because you bore false witness. Or you may let a real criminal off the hook where injustice is done because you lied to the court, you bore false witness, and said, no, I saw him over here, he didn't do that, when he really did do it. And that brings injustice, and God hates that. That's what a testimony is. So twice here, he says you are to put into this ark, into this box, you are to put the testimony I'm giving you. That should raise some questions. What is the testimony? What is the witness? This to go in the box. Is it a person? There's a witness. I want you to put him in the box. Verse 22, I will meet with you there in the sanctuary, in the temple or tabernacle. And from above the atonement lid, from between the two cherubim that are over the ark of the testimony. How many times have you seen or thought of the ark when you think about the old covenant? You think of the ark of the covenant. That's what we call it. Have you ever thought of why it's called the ark of the covenant? It's a strange term, but we are so familiar with it, we don't even stop and ask the question, why? Why do we refer to it that way? And notice here, it is not called the Ark of the Covenant. It's called the Ark of the Testimony. Because in the Ark is the testimony, the witness that they are to put in it. The witness to what? The testimony to what? Remember, I have told you and I've shown you all the way along the two tablets, the Ten Commandments, rather, the 10 words are the 10 words of the covenant that God made with Israel. And I told you that the heart of that covenant are the 10 words, as we see here in Deuteronomy 4:13. And God revealed to you, Israelites, the covenant he has commanded you to keep, the 10 commandments, writing them on stone tablets. What is the covenant God made with Israel? It's the 10 words. Remember, I've told you this is not actually the term covenant. I mean, a commandment. I wish they had translated it literally. The 10 words, and he wrote them on two stone tablets. On the two stone tablets are those 10 words, those 10 commandments, as we call them, that are the heart and soul of the covenant God made with Israel. They are the covenant documents. They are the stipulations, the vows that God is going to hold Israel to in this covenant that God has made with them. What is the testimony that is to be placed in the ark? It's the stone tablets. Because they are not the eternal moral law of God. They are not God's desire for all men everywhere. At least not in anything we've seen. If you're going to prove that, you got to go somewhere else. They are the core stipulations of the covenant God made with Israel. And the documents, the tablets that have the 10 words, testify if God ever needs to bring Israel to court. And he says, look, here are your actions. Now let me pull the covenant documents before you and see, have you violated the terms of the covenant? Oh, look, you have. These stone tablets give a testimony that you have broken the covenant. That's the function of the two tablets. Exodus 31. This is after he describes the Sabbath. In Exodus 31, we looked at this before. The purpose of the Sabbath was the sign of the covenant. This covenant God made with Israel, the sign of that covenant was the Sabbath day. Then he says this. He gave Moses two tablets of testimony when he finished speaking with him on Mount Sinai, tablets of stone written by the finger of God. So when he said put the testimony in the ark, he means put the two tablets, because these are the two tablets of testimony, and they're to be put in the ark of the covenant, the ark of testimony. And they carried this ark around with them everywhere they went. And we think it's because it's a sign of God's presence, and it is. But it's not only a sign of God's presence. It contains the foundational documents of the covenant. Now, what happens next? Chapter 32 of Exodus. When the people saw that Moses delayed in coming down from the mountain. So he's up on the mountain where God is with his own finger carving out the 10 words on these stone tablets. So Moses up there receiving the tablets of testimony. The people said, oh, Moses is delaying. He's been gone a long time. So they gathered around Aaron and said to him, get up, make us gods that will go before us. Let that sink in. Remember, God gives in Exodus 20, he gives the terms of the covenant. What is the first word of the covenant? You shall have no other gods before me. What is the second word of the covenant? do not make graven images. Then Moses goes up the mountain to get the documents that record those words. And while he's up there, the Israelites come to Aaron and say, make us gods that will go before us. The ink is not even dry on the contract between God and Israel is breaking the first two words. As for this fellow Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. He just went up the mountain, he's gone. So Aaron, remember, Moses' brother, said to them, break off the gold earrings that are on the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me. So all the people broke off the gold earrings that were on their ears and brought them to Aaron. He accepted the gold from them, fashioned it with an engraving tool, and made a molten calf. Then they said, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt. I don't even know if I need to say anything about that. When Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made a proclamation and said, tomorrow will be a feast to the Lord. So they got up early on the next day and offered up burnt offerings and peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink, and they rose up to play. They are having a party. Offerings to the Lord and to this golden calf. The Lord spoke to Moses, go quickly, descend, because your people, whom you brought up from the land of Egypt, have acted corruptly. God says, these are not my people. I didn't bring them out of Egypt. You did. They have quickly turned aside from the way that I commanded them. They have made for themselves a molten calf and have bowed down to it and sacrificed to it and said, these are your gods, O Israel, which brought you up from the land of Egypt. Then the Lord said to Moses, I have seen this people. Look, what a stiff-necked people they are. So now leave me alone so that my anger can burn against them and I can destroy them. And I will make from you a great nation. You remember the terms of the covenant we read yesterday, the curses for disobedience? God says, I'm ready. I'm ready to unleash my wrath. They've broke the covenant. They already disobeyed the first two words. Moses, get out of the way. I'm going to wipe them out. And hey, you're a descendant of Abraham. I'll just start with you, start over with you, and make a great nation. I can still fulfill my promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob through you. Move aside, Moses. I'm going to take them out. But Moses sought the favor of the Lord his God and said, O Lord, why does your anger burn against your people? Whom you have brought out from the land of Egypt with the great power and with a mighty hand. Neither of them want to claim credit. God says, they're your people, Moses. Moses says, you brought them out. These are your people, God. Okay, so he asks God, to be favorable to the Israelites. Notice what he does not appeal to. He does not appeal to the terms of the covenant. Where would he go in the covenant God has made with Israel to appeal to God not to wipe them out? There's nowhere to go because of the if. If you obey, I'll bless you, God says. If you disobey, I'll destroy you. Moses can't go, but God, you promised. If they disobeyed, you promised to be gracious. No, he didn't. He promised to destroy them. Moses doesn't appeal to the covenant because the covenant condemned Israel from the very beginning, from the first day, basically. Little preview of what's coming probably next week. Paul calls the law a ministry of condemnation. So he doesn't appeal to the covenant because the covenant condemned them already. He appeals to God's own name. Why should the Egyptians say, "For evil he led them out to kill them in the mountains and destroyed them from the face of the earth"? Turn from your burning anger and relent of this evil against your people. You see what Moses is doing? Look, God, if you wipe them all out, the Egyptians are going to say, "So that's why God rescued them from us, so he could just destroy them in the wilderness?" Lord, you don't want the Egyptians to think that of you. And then he says, "Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel," or Jacob, right? "Your servants, to whom you swore by yourself and told them, 'I will multiply your descendants like the stars of heaven, and all this land that I have spoken about, I will give to your descendants, and they will inherit it forever.'" Remember your promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You see what he's doing? He's not appealing to the covenant. The covenant has condemned Israel. God is right and just to wipe them out. But he says, "Lord, think of your reputation among the Egyptians. Think about your promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You've got this multitude of people, descendants of Jacob, that are about to take this land that you promised. If you wipe them all out, how are you going to fulfill that promise?" Well, of course, the answer would be, "I already told you, Moses. I'm going to start over with you. And yes, it'll take centuries and centuries to get this many people again, but I can do it. And then I'll fill the land with your offspring." But that's not what God says. The Lord relented over the evil he had said he would do to his people. He changed his mind, said, "All right, I won't destroy them." That's good. So now Moses turned and went down from the mountain with the two tablets of the testimony in his hands. The tablets were written on both sides. They were written on the front and on the back. Now the tablets were the work of God, and the writing was the writing of God engraved on the tablets. So Moses hears God say, "Okay, fine, I won't wipe them out." And now he takes the two stone tablets of testimony that do what? That bear witness against Israel. These are the terms of the covenant on these two stone tablets. And Moses rushes down the mountain carrying the tablets of testimony in his hands. Remember, Joshua was with him? When Joshua heard the noise of the people as they shouted, he said to Moses, "It is the sound of war in the camp." Moses said, "It is not the sound of those who shout for victory, nor is it the sound of those who cry because they are overcome, but I hear singing." When he approached the camp and saw the calf and the dancing, Moses became extremely angry. He threw the tablets from his hands and broke them into pieces at the bottom of the mountain. All right, friends, put your thinking caps on. Is this some sort of a fit of rage by Moses? I mean, it says he's angry. He sees the golden calf and he's angry. So in a fit of furor and rage, Moses hurls down the stone tablets and shatters them into pieces. Is that what's happening here? It's possible. But I think there is a better understanding that makes much more sense. Did you catch it? Anybody? No, David, I don't think that's right. Moses knew the tablets spelled destruction to the people, so he figuratively got rid of the death sentence. How can he get rid of the death sentence? I don't think that's quite right. There, child of Elohim. he is showing them in a very visual way they have broken the covenant. He is breaking the stone tablets, I believe, as a symbol of the covenant they've broken. It's bearing testimony to them that they have disobeyed the law, and that they will be broken. At least they deserve that. He took the calf they had made and burned it in the fire, ground it to powder, poured it out on the water, and made the Israelites drink it. Moses said to Aaron, "What did this people do to you that you have brought on them so great a sin?" Aaron said, "Do not let your anger burn hot, my Lord. You know these people, that they tend to evil." "I didn't do anything, it's them. They said to me, 'Make us a gods, make us gods that will go before us. For as for this fellow Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has happened to him.' So I said, 'Whoever has gold, break it off.' So they gave it to me, and I threw it in the fire, and this calf came out." What a weasel. "It's not my fault, Moses. These people made me do it, and all I did was throw gold in the fire, and this calf jumped out." I've told my kids their whole lives, sin makes us stupid. Aaron, right here, is in deep sin, and he looks really stupid. Moses saw the people running wild, for Aaron had let them get completely out of control, causing derision from their enemies. So Moses stood up at the entrance of the camp and said, "Whoever is for the Lord, come to me." All the Levites gathered around him. They said to them, "This is what the Lord says. The God of Israel has said, each man fasten his sword to his side, go back and forth from entrance to entrance throughout the camp, each one kill his brother, his friend, and his neighbor." The Levites did what Moses ordered, and that day about 3,000 men of the people died. Moses said, "You have been consecrated today for the Lord, for each of you was against his son or against his brother, so he has given you a blessing today." That's to the Levites. The next day, Moses said to the people, "You have committed a very serious sin. But now I will go up to the Lord. Perhaps I can make atonement on behalf of your sin." So Moses returned to the Lord and said, "Alas, this people has committed a very serious sin. They've made for themselves gods of gold. But now, if you will forgive their sin, but if not, wipe me out from your book that you have written." Now, I don't know how many times I've heard people, preachers, speak of this and raise the question about whether or not we can lose our salvation. Come on, people. In the context, what is the book that Moses says, "If you won't forgive Israel, wipe me from your book as well"? What's the book? I've emphasized this a few other times in preparation for this morning. I've emphasized this so that maybe you would see it. What's the book that Moses says, "Wipe me out of if you won't"? Lewis says the Decalogue. Yes. Yeah. I would say it's a little more than that. Remember, so we read Exodus 20, where the Decalogue, Child of Elohim says Lamb's Book of Legends. Nope, it's not the Lamb's Book of Life. Ron got it. It's the Book of the Covenant. Yeah, it's not the story of Jesus. It's the Book of the Covenant. Remember, we read the terms of the covenant, Exodus 20, the Ten Commandments, 10 words. And then we just sort of summarize, or maybe I just alluded to, the next several chapters. He expands on those commandments and applies them and so on. And then chapter 24, verse 6, Moses took half of the blood, put it in basins, the other half of bloody sprinkled on the altar. Then he took the book of the covenant and read it in the hearing of the people. And they said, all the Lord has spoken, we will do. We will be obedient. So Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people and said, behold, the blood of the covenant, which the Lord has made with you in accordance with all these words. The book of the covenant, or the scroll of the covenant, is the covenant, starting with the Decalogue, but it's those chapters, the law that God gave to Israel and said, this is what you are required to do. And so now Moses says, Lord, you said you're going to wipe out the people. I'm asking you to forgive them. If you won't forgive them, then take me out of the covenant as well. That's what he means. Wipe me out from your book that you've written. You said you would start over with me, Lord. No, I don't want to do this. I'm saying, please forgive them or else exclude me from the covenant as well. Now, I don't mean this as a rebuke, but an admonition to be better. It's a systematic framework that says that led to the conclusion that some of you had, this is the book of life or something like that. We've got to stick to the context and stick to the text and look carefully at these words that are written and spoken and follow the line of the story. So what does the Lord respond with? He said to Moses, whoever has sinned against me, that person I will wipe out from my book. These people who bowed down before the golden calf, I'm going to remove them from the covenant. So now go, lead the people to the place I've spoken to you about. See, my angel will go before you, but on the day that I punish, I will indeed punish them for their sin. So God says, all right, I won't wipe them off the face of the earth right now, but I will punish them. When I punish them, on that day, I will. Fast forward 40 plus years, as they're about to enter the land of Canaan, and the original generation has died off, and now it's the second generation, and Moses is repeating the covenant terms to this generation of Jews, Israelites, about to go in to the promised land. Here's what he said. This is Moses. Deuteronomy 9:8. Even at Horeb, that's Sinai, you provoked the Lord to wrath, and the Lord was so angry with you that he would have destroyed you. When I went up to the mountain to receive the tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant, when you think Ten Commandments, when you think the tablets of stone, you must think tablets of the covenant, tablets of testimony, testifying to the covenant terms, which are blessings if they obey and curses if they disobey. So he says, I received the tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant, which the Lord had made with you. Then I remained on the mountain 40 days and nights. I neither ate bread nor drank water. The Lord gave me the two tablets of stone written by the finger of God, and on them were all the words which the Lord had spoken with you at the mountain from the midst of the fire on the day of the assembly. It came about at the end of 40 days and nights that the Lord gave me the two tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant. Then the Lord said to me, arise, go down from here quickly, for your people whom you brought out of Egypt have acted corruptly. They have quickly turned aside from the way which I commanded them. They have made a molten image for themselves. The Lord spoke further to me, saying, I have seen this people. Indeed, it is a stubborn people. Let me alone that I may destroy them and blot out their name from under heaven, and I will make of you a nation mightier and greater than they. So I turned and came down from the mountain while the mountain was burning with fire, and the two tablets of the covenant were in my two hands. And I saw that you had indeed sinned against the Lord your God. You had made for yourselves a molten calf. You had turned aside quickly from the way which the Lord had commanded. I took hold of the two tablets and threw them from my hand and smashed them before your eyes. I fell down before the Lord as at the first 40 days and nights. I neither ate bread nor drank water because of all your sin which you committed in doing what was evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. We've got to keep these things in context, folks. And we've got to understand the story as it's being unfolded. Get away from your theology and your systems and bringing all these assumptions to the text. What we're supposed to see in the tablets and the ark, not Noah's ark, but the ark of the covenant, is the law was given to Israel as the stipulations of the covenant, that if they obeyed, they would be a special people to him. They would be a holy nation, a kingdom of priests. He would prosper them in everything they set their hand to. But if they broke his law, if they worshiped other gods, if they made graven images, if they broke the Sabbath, if they committed adultery and murder and so on, then God would punish them with such severe consequences that those who were not killed would wish they were dead. It would be so bad. The Ten Commandments were the testimony that these were the terms of the covenant and the standard by which God would judge Israel to decide if they'd kept it or not. What does Jesus say? I'm not the one that accuses you. Moses is the one who accuses you. Because Moses is the law, the terms of the covenant. That changes everything with respect to our view of the future of Israel. I'm sure we'll come back and talk about this more, but let me just leave you with this little thought. Those who think that Israel is still in covenant with God, this is the covenant they're under. What are the terms of the covenant? If modern day Israel is still in covenant with God, this is the covenant. So what happens if they break the covenant? Well, the terms say God will destroy them. Do we believe that modern day Israel is and can obey God's law? Are their hearts not stiff-necked? Mixing my metaphors there. Are their hearts not hardened? Are they a God-fearing people under God's blessing? Is that who the Israelites are? It's good news for Israel if this covenant is over. Because this covenant is a harsh one. Unbending. All right. We'll come back and talk more about that down the road. Oh, way over time. Appreciate your patience and your comments here. We will see you tomorrow and continue talking about these things. Grace and peace to you.